I'm Jason Zook, and this is the Breffni Early Show.
Breffni, you come all the way from Ireland for this adventure.
Isn't Breffni Early a real tonic, full of positivity?
It's an amazing story, Breffni, with a wonderful, happy ending.
All of those things on your bucket list wouldn't necessarily have led you to do the World Cycle Race.
27 countries, 490 days. 18,000 miles on a bike.
You've decided that's it. You're going to keep giving yourself challenges.
Welcome to the Breffni Early Show, where each week I bring you a guest who is interesting, inspirational, and motivational. And this week, we've hit the jackpot again. I have who I consider to be the absolute king of sales on the show this week. We're going to get into a whole lot of things about how he sold his future, how he wore people's shirts for money over the next hour or so. And I think you're going to be absolutely fascinated by how this guy can take an idea and turn it into cash and live off really, really simple ideas just by making them into something that you really, really want to be involved in. Jason Zook, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, my friend. It is good to be here. And, you know, I appreciate the intro. I don't like sales. We're going to talk about that, I'm sure. But I do appreciate being called the king of sales.
Absolutely. Well, Jason, we met almost a year ago now at a little conference in North Dakota that we both were speaking at. But I think the story of how we actually met is even more interesting than that itself. We were at the welcome party. Neither of us were aware that the other was speaking at the event because that's how the event worked. Misfit, yep. Of course, is what I'm talking about here, MisfitCon. And we end up at a party and we end up getting stranded and having to wait for the loser bus, the very end of the bus. Everyone else was gone. There was six of us on the bus, and all of whom actually turned out to be speakers at the event without any of us knowing who the other people were, which was quite funny, if you remember that rightly.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we ended up having a sing-song and go for a few drinks afterwards in Fargo.
I was wondering how far you were going to take that. But yeah, for those folks, obviously, who were not there, which is everybody, there were literally six of us on a huge bus. And we all, you know, I think my girlfriend and I got on the bus first, but we were all standing around before that, you know, a little bit chatting here and there, kind of trying to feel each other out. Like, we didn't know who each other were. And we got on the bus, and then we all just kind of sat next to each other. Yeah, and then you started singing, and it was some of the most beautiful singing I've ever heard in person.
I think you do me a disservice. I think, I don't know about that. I can't remember why. I think John Sweeney.
Oh, yeah, John Sweeney definitely talked. Yeah,
he was the catalyst. I didn't just burst out into song.
No, yeah. Sorry, yes. I don't want to. Yeah, you're not the egotistical maniac who gets on any bus and just starts singing, even though that would be kind of funny. But yeah, no.
It really does depend on the bus.
Yeah, we just started chatting. Well, after you were singing, we were chatting, and it was just really fun. And then, yeah, we kind of stayed in touch and hugged probably multiple times throughout that event. And yeah, it's amazing that it's already been a year. Time sure does fly.
It's amazing. But you spoke at the event, and I was absolutely enthralled listening to you. Now, I want to hear a little bit about Jason Zook, because you weren't always Jason Zook.
Yeah, I've got, I don't know, many weird entrepreneurial stories. Maybe my last name one is the weirdest, but I've had six last names in my life, dating back to, you know, when I was born. I had three last names until I was 31, I guess, 30. And, you know, when in 2012, I turned 30 years old. But right before that, my mom let me know that she was going to get a divorce with my stepfather at the time. And so this is my third father, unfortunately. And just, you know, the circumstances of why they were getting divorced were not great. And it left me with this last name of Sadler that I didn't want. I didn't want to be attached to this person anymore. I didn't care about them as a person. And I, what do you do when you have a last name you don't want? And, you know, you've had early your entire life, I'm guessing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Most people have had a last name their entire life, and they can't relate to this idea that literally half of my name, you know, the first half is still mine. The second half means nothing. It is really difficult. You know, it's kind of one of those things where you have a little bit of an identity crisis. And so, you know, I was running this business called I Wear Your Shirt, which we'll, I'm sure, talk about. But I'd been wearing sponsored t-shirts every day for years. And so I was very acclimated to talking about brands and talking about companies. And at the time, I'd probably worked with over 1,000 of them. Like I said, we'll probably get into more of that. But This last name situation happened, and I off the cuff joked to my mom when we were on Skype one day. I just said, you know, screw it, I'm just going to sell my last name to a company. And, you know, we both kind of laughed and like, what a crazy idea that would be. Like, that would be such a ridiculous thing that no one would ever do. Well, I bought the domain buymylastname.com. I put my last name up for auction starting at $0 on the first day. It was a 30-day auction. And in the first 24 hours, the bidding went from $0 to $30,000. And it was at that moment that I realized, number one, there are a lot of crazy people on the internet, too, who have money. And that, you really can get paid for literally anything. It's amazing how many people doubt themselves and just won't even put themselves out there because they're afraid, you know, it just won't work. And, you know, yes, I did have a little bit of experience. I had built up some social authority, if you will. So I sold my last name twice. The first year I was jasonheadsets.com. I made $45,000. And the second year I sold it, I was Jason Surfer App and I made another $50,000. So almost $100,000 selling my last name. And now I am Jason Zook. That is a name that my great-grandfather had. And if you're interested to learn more about that story, I actually wrote a little bit of a tribute to him because he passed away when I was younger. I didn't know him very well at jasonzook.com. Super easy to find that you can kind of learn more about it. But yeah, so now I have this last name, no longer selling my name, but a kind of a crazy whirlwind journey to find my forever last name.
Let's rewind a little bit back to your childhood. Tell me about Jason Whatever. Growing up as a teenager?
Yeah, I moved around a lot as a kid. I grew up with a single mom until I was 8. And then, you know, she got remarried, had my sister. She was only remarried for about a year. And then it was just, you know, again, single mom with, you know, a sister for about another 5 to 10 years. I don't even remember. So it was just a lot of change, a lot of kind of scraping to get by. You know, we weren't poor necessarily, but it's just, you know, not a lot of income for a mom and two kids. And I kind of grew up with constant change, with constant having to deal with being the new kid in schools, you know, not having a father figure around, very strong mother figure. Like my mom was probably more of a dad than most people's dads are. But she, you know, she was just so strong-willed and so great for me growing up that I never worried for anything. I never had any problems. And even through all this change, you know, she would just keep telling me, you know, stuff like, hey, you know, being embarrassed tomorrow about being the new kid is only going to last so long. You'll be fine. You'll get over it, you know, whatever, for whatever those circumstances were growing up. So, that was my life. I went to 14 different schools growing up, 4 different high schools, just a lot of different change in my life. And I wasn't entrepreneurial. So, you know, I've been an entrepreneur for almost 10 years now, but I didn't do anything entrepreneurial as a kid. I didn't sell baseball cards. I didn't have a lemonade stand. I think I cut one lawn for like $10 and I hated it. And I was like, I'm not doing this. This doesn't make me enough money that I even care to do this again. So that was kind of my upbringing.
Then you decided to do web design.
Yeah, my mom, for one of her jobs, got a Gateway computer. And for those listening, you will remember distinctly when these arrived at your home in the cow print box. And it's just such a weird thing. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you can literally search like Gateway cow print box on Google and you can see photos of it. Be careful because searching anything in Google Images these days might lead to promiscuous things. But it was just this big white and black.
I don't want you to be searching.
It was just this big white and black box that showed up, and in that box was like a desktop computer, but this was, you know, early 90s, so this thing was huge and it was slow, and you know, we had AOL, it had just come out, and we had to load the 14 disks into the computer to load AOL, and anyway, I just became really enamored with this thing. And you know, I remember connecting to the internet for the first time, and you know, just reading voraciously as a like 13-year-old kid, like everything that I could about how this thing worked. And so I would like take the computer apart and I would put it back together. And eventually I found light programming and I learned, you know, kind of taught myself C++ and C++ and all the other C's. And then web design kind of came about where, you know, things were ugly on this little internet, what there was of it. And I just started dabbling and I could create my own stuff. And that was really my first foray into just being creative. You know, I drew a little bit as a kid, like had sketchbooks and stuff, but, you know, I could move pixels around on a screen and create anything I wanted. It was pretty amazing for me as a kid. So, yeah, that kind of got my start. And then I went to college for graphic design, which was kind of a waste of time. in general, but you know, it was easy for me. And then I got a job out of school. My first and really like last 9-to-5 job was as a designer for men's professional tennis, the governing body of tennis, which is the ATP.
What did that involve?
A lot of sitting at a beige desk with a beige chair and beige walls and a beige existence, I would say. It was really just getting up every day, driving to work, sitting at a computer, doing work that didn't matter to me. You know, it was at a sports agency. The people were really nice. The pay was great. You know, being able to work in the sports world was wonderful because I was a college basketball player, so that was nice. But everything else about the corporate environment and the corporate world was just, I could feel it pulling away at my core. Like, it just was like, this is not where you're meant to be, Jason. You shouldn't be doing this. And it, you know, I was there for 3.5 years, but at the 2.5 year mark, somehow Seth Godin's book, Purple Cow, landed on my desk. And I still to this day can't remember who gave it to me because I didn't read. Like, the previous book that I had read to that book was James and the Giant Peach when I was a little kid. So, and I promise that's not a joke. Like, every book in school that you had to read, I wouldn't read. I would read like the first chapter and the last chapter, and I would just fake my way through a book report, like whatever I could do. But I read this book and I just remember like crushing through it in one day. And I was just so surprised that someone gave me permission in a book that I could be weird and I could be different and I could be this idea of this purple cow. If you've never read Seth Godin's book, I highly recommend it. And that was it, man. That was the catalyst for me to say, no more 9-to-5 world, no more working for somebody else. I can do my own thing. I don't even know what that is. I have no clue what that's going to be. But I have skills, I'm an interesting person, which I think everybody is, and I should do something else that I actually enjoy. And that was 2006, and then I ended up leaving in 2007, started a little design company with a friend of mine, and that kind of grew into my entrepreneurial career.
The first idea that really took hold, in the public perception at least, was the iwearmyshirt.com. What was that?
Yeah, so I started just getting all of this confidence that there was no idea that I couldn't pursue. And I think it was just the fact that like the internet gives you the freedom to find anything, to create anything. And we had some clients at this design company and a lot of them were asking us about social media, Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. And I knew what these were, but I wasn't really on any of them. And I just saw this opportunity where there were all these people sitting on these platforms. And you have to remember, this is like 10 years ago now. All these people sitting on these platforms, but there were no companies. There were no brands. There were no, you know, no one was in there like, you know, tweeting all their updates about their stupid business. But I thought, hey, what if I was the conduit for brands to be on these platforms and hopefully not ruin it, but just be a real person sharing stories of companies? Like, that's what I thought I could do, was be a storyteller that just kind of, again, like was a conduit to share their message in a non-crappy marketing way. And so I woke up one morning, I've been thinking about this idea of what these clients were asking us, and I'm standing in my closet and I'm looking at all these shirts and I see like Polo, Nike, you know, all these different brands on these shirts. And it hits me just like a bolt of lightning, like a literal bolt of lightning. Holy shit, like I'm paying for these pieces of clothing, and then I'm walking around like an idiot promoting them every single day for nothing. Like I'm literally making like all the promotion for these companies happen, and they get just constant exposure. And I said, what if I turn this on its head? And I said, I want to be the guy that gets paid to wear a t-shirt, because I'm already doing it anyway for companies, but you know, kind of flip it and then say, I'll promote you via social media. I'll take this idea that I have and I'll create, you know, I'll take photos, I'll make videos, you know, whatever. And that's where the I Wear Your Shirt idea came from. You know, that's really it. And then I kind of like to say that, you know, about a month later, I had a website built because I had a website company. We built this cool calendar, how I was going to sell every single day in 2009 on the calendar. And it was going to be $1 on the first day, $2 on the second day, increasing $1 every single day, just so I could create some urgency. You know, no one knew who I was, so just to create some buzz. And when I launched it, 12 people showed up on the first day. Like, no one cared about this idea. And here I was thinking it was like the greatest idea that I had ever come up with. And no one gave a crap when it first launched.
Yeah, but 12 people is a start.
12 people is a start. 2 people is a start. 1 person is a start. You know, this is one of those things I've learned in business, that we get really obsessed with the numbers and we get really obsessed with the metrics and how many people like something and how many people come to a web page. And you're so right. You know, having 12 people, if anything, was motivation for me because it said, hey, someone actually did show up. I mean, maybe it was just my mom and my grandmother. Like, I don't know. But it just showed me that, okay, I need to put in some more work to get more people to find this. But also, hey, I did this. I made this thing. I put this thing out into the world. Now what's the next step? You know, there are always more steps. There are always more things you can do.
I'm very interested in this because I think a lot of people get to this stage. They have the idea. They have the concept. They maybe even develop it to the point where they're ready to launch it. And then the problem is selling it. And as you said, getting the word out there and getting people who have the deep pockets to actually get on board. What was the key moment for you when you went from being your mom and your mates looking at the page to actually starting to see dollars clicking through the electronic turnstiles?
Yeah, I mean, I've had no sales experience my entire life. I literally knew nothing about this. And I just thought that by building a website, people were going to show up. Like I really just thought that would happen. And, you know, when only like, you know, my friends and my family showed up, like you said, it made me think, okay, well, I have to tell people that this exists. And here's the thing that I think was really the important factor in getting the courage to start like selling more is that I loved this idea. I really thought this idea of I wear your shirt every single day that I would do this was such a cool and interesting idea. So I just started emailing people. I went into my email inbox and I just scrolled down and I just started hitting new mail to every single person in my inbox, whether it was a friend or a family member or someone who'd email me randomly. I probably even replied to some of those Nigerian princes who like want to give you $10 million if you give them whatever money. Like I just was emailing every single person in my inbox and it wasn't trying to sell them all. I just was trying to tell them that the idea existed because I thought in my mind, if I just let this person know that maybe they'll tell somebody else because it is an interesting idea or it can solve a problem for someone who's looking for exposure or whatever. And so this is what I did, Brefni. Every day, every morning after the site launched, I just sat down and I emailed for as long as I could every day. And sometimes I would get 20 emails out the door. Sometimes I would get 200. And, you know, a lot of it came down to, hey, you know, when I'm sending these emails, hey, do you know anybody who might be interested? And these are people that you've emailed with before, so you have a little bit of trust. And they would say, yeah, sure. Like, here's an introduction to my Uncle John, who has a landscaping company. Here's an introduction to, like, this company I've worked with, whatever. And so I just started building this little, like, kind of network from all these other people that I already had, like, some type of context with. And then the dollars started coming in. People started just going to the website when I was telling them about it, going, oh, this is interesting, or this is something that I would buy into, and they started spending money. So the more that this, like this kind of this cycle of me sending emails and people buying and introducing me to people, you know, I realized was a kind of a, it had a finite ending, right? There's only so many people that I could email. I didn't know that many people. I maybe had like 300 or 400 contacts, maybe total after all that. And what I just started realizing was, okay, what's the next thing that I can do? You know, where are some other places? And so I started getting on Twitter. I started reaching out to companies on Twitter that I thought were cool. And so I just put in all this work to like shout at the top of my lungs that this thing was interesting that I was working on and I was really proud of it and I'd love for people to check it out. And it just started to work for me. And I think people really saw that I was authentic. I wasn't trying to just sell them on something. I was just trying to show them the idea. And little by little, that just built up. You know, it wasn't like an immediate success in the beginning. It wasn't something crazy. But I strongly believe, and I tell people this all the time, your most important beginning part of your business is already sitting in your inbox. All of those contacts that you have trust with, they're already there waiting to hear from you on whatever you're working on, and they will help you if you're willing to ask. And most people are afraid to ask. They don't want to get shot down. They don't want to hear no. You know, they don't want to offend somebody. And my whole idea is that I want these things that I've done over the years more than I fear someone saying no, or more than I fear someone, you know, giving me a little bit of piece of rejection or something.
Very good. A very good lesson. I'm going to have to use that one myself. I'm interested in the figures here, because you mentioned it was $1 for the first day, $2 for the second, third, $3 day three, and so on. At what point did you change that? Like, did you stop that after 365? Did you stop it earlier? Or was day one of year two, was that 366?
Yeah, so basically the way that I set it up was the first year was just like you said, $1 on the first day, $365 on the last day. you know, fill in the gaps in between. And that was nice. That equaled $66,795. And fun little tidbit, I didn't know that there is some formula that does this. Smart math people will know this. I typed in every single cell in Excel to get to 365.
Oh, no.
And then and selected them all. It only took like 10 minutes, but I didn't know what, I was like, I don't know math. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. Just like I didn't know sales. Like, but I figured out a way to figure it out, right? So it ended up being this, almost $67,000 for the first year. So the second year, what I thought was, okay, this thing, I want to grow it a little bit. I want to make a little bit more money if I can. It started getting some really good attention after the first year. Even after the like first half of the first year, like people started finding it organically. So I really didn't have to do sales anymore at all. And that just goes to show like showing up consistently and putting out a good product and all that stuff. But yeah, so the second year was two people at double the calendar price. So it started at $2 on January 1st, 2010, and it went up to $730 on the last day. So that made, actually four it made times. About two. Two yeah, well, it actually made dollars. About two. $200,000 total. So it was double the price of the calendar from the previous year. So 67,000 times two, essentially. Plus I added in some extra sponsors. So I did like monthly sponsors. I had an underwear sponsor in 2010, which was really silly.
Did you have to pose in your underwear all the time?
I didn't. That was one of the deals we worked out, was no underwear posing, because my grandmother would actually watch my, I had a live video show that I hosted every day, and can't do promiscuous stuff when grandma's watching. That's I had the grandma filter. So, but yeah, so the third year was, I basically 5X'd. So if the second year was 2X, think of the third year as 5X. So every day it went up by $5 instead. We had five shirt wearers, and that year was over $500,000 in revenue made. And then the fourth year was kind of the same. Fourth year was actually really confusing, but, tried a couple different things, didn't work out. So total after four, almost 5 years, it ended up being $1 million in revenue generated for the business.
And then something interesting happened, because obviously there doesn't appear to be a huge cost involved in wearing a t-shirt. You make $1 million in 4 or 5 years revenue, but you found yourself in a pretty sticky situation financially.
Yeah, this one I think is always the shocker, because, and I tell this story openly and honestly, is that when I shut down the I Wear Your Shirt business, it wasn't for lack of people reaching out to me saying, oh, we want to pay you. Like, there were plenty of people who still wanted to pay me money, but I had racked up $100,000 in debt. And it wasn't frivolous spending. It wasn't anything else. It was that if you think about the way the calendar pricing is structured, it's very low price in the beginning of the year, higher price toward the end of the year. Well, when I had employees, you can imagine I paid them a salary. I paid them like a monthly salary that was normal, because how could you convince anybody to work on like an escalating salary? That wouldn't work. Maybe I should have tried it, but
it might work if you're going to get a few thousand in December coming up to Christmas.
Yeah, maybe. But I was afraid to try it. And so, I was coming out of pocket these beginning parts of the year, these beginning months for salaries for people that were working for me. And I got up to eight people at one point. And so I was spending about $30,000 a month on salary. And, when cash reserves got low because I ran out of money from the previous year, or clients didn't pay their bills on time, which was just, that just happened all the time. And, and I had a lot of clients to have to chase down. And eventually my girlfriend came on board and she was chasing clients down full time. That was literally her full time job toward the end, was just getting people to pay their bills. But anyway, I ended up with this $100,000 in debt. And that was basically the line in the sand that I drew, that I said, this business isn't working anymore. It's not profitable. Plus, I had worked myself into the ground. I had worked every single day for almost 5 years straight. No vacations, no breaks. And every day I was making a YouTube video. I was, taking photos. I was posting on social media. I was working with clients. I was managing people. I was organizing the t-shirt printing. I was, answering all the emails from people who were trying to get, I had to keep selling things. I had to keep answering stuff and promoting stuff. And so it was just so many things, Brefni. And I got to this debt and, man, it was tough. Like, I still think back to when I realized I added up like all these credit cards and it was $100,000. And I remember sitting up late at night one night, I just couldn't fall asleep. And I'm just thinking about it. Like, how did I get to this point? How did I let it get to this crippling amount of debt? I mean, it's so much money to owe. And what am I going to do to get out of it? Like, my business isn't making enough money and I'm not happy with this business at all. I don't want to do it anymore. And what's really interesting is then from the outside, I had to pretend like everything was perfect. Because if I was still working with clients, no one wants a guy to wear a shirt who's like upset and, you know, complaining about being in debt and saying his business is failing. No one would pay for that. And no one would look on Facebook and like a post from a guy who's saying, hey guys, today's not so great. I couldn't make the payments on my credit card minimums. Like, that doesn't sell things. And so I just had this like incredible mental struggle for quite a few months. And this is 2013 now, kind of catching everybody up timeline wise, of just misery. Like, honestly, like just this deep turmoil. And funny enough, where it turned around for me was the first year of MisfitCon. So that was 2013. I went to that conference as a speaker. And everybody that was there thought I was just going to tell this great story, how I made $1 million wearing shirts. I had told no one I was struggling except for my girlfriend, Caroline, maybe my mom, maybe my grandmother. I mean, really, that was it. My employees knew because I started letting them go. And I stood up on stage at this Misfit conference in Fargo, North Dakota. And I made the decision when I was there that this was going to be the moment. This was, felt like a safe place to me. It was no longer going to be pretending that everything was okay. And I just said, guys, I have to be honest. I'm supposed to sit up here and tell you this great story. I can't do it. I'm $100,000 in debt. Everything's falling apart and I don't know what to do. And for 45 minutes, I talked to Srini, who was a guy who was there, who was kind of interviewing me on stage. I don't remember a thing that I said for that 45 minutes. I completely like blacked out, but I just tried to be open and share things that I hadn't shared anywhere before. And it was so cathartic. And I'm even like now, I still get chills thinking about it. Like, I'm so glad that I did that publicly because it was like this huge weight lifted off my shoulders. And I think part of getting out of debt is admitting to debt, is getting through the shame and the embarrassment and the holding it deep down because you feel like you've done something wrong or you've accrued this money that you owe that feels daunting. And instead just coming to terms with it and saying, okay, I did this. Like, so what? Here it is. And what you find is that a lot of people come up to you afterwards, so many people that said, Jason, I'm in debt too. Like, I'm in over my head. I've never admitted it. Like, thank you so much for having the courage to talk about this. And continue to this day, you know, many years later now, I still share this story. You know, I wrote a huge long article about getting out of debt and how I did it. And it's one of those things, man, that's so tough. And I'm sorry I've rambled on so long about it, but it was a really pivotal point in my life to realize that debt, admit that debt, then start to fight out of it.
No, I think obviously we met in Fargo, as we mentioned earlier, and my presentation that day was a very similar story, although not relating to debt. It was to do with mental health, and the motto that I was trying to spread was, it's okay not to feel okay, and it's absolutely okay to ask for help. And obviously, I associate that with mental health, but I think it applies to so many different things, whether it's addiction, whether it's debt, whether it's your own mental health or your own thoughts. It's so important to be open about that sort of stuff. And obviously, this wasn't the direction I thought this podcast was going to go this week. but I think it's vital for people who are listening in to be honest with themselves, because we all know it. Like, you know, when you're carrying a few extra pounds, or when you're, I don't know, when you're struggling financially, you know you don't have any money in the bank. You know your clothes are a little bit tighter than you'd like them to be. And yet you put up this front of saying, oh, I can't do X, Y, and Z, or you convince yourself, you try and tell yourself that you're making it up, it's not real, and that you can get through it. But I suppose the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results.
Yeah, and I remember being, number one, so touched by your story that you shared, and just thinking, you know, that was just last year, and I'm thinking to myself, like, man, I got up there and thought I told a good story about being in debt. Like, that has nothing to compare with what you're going through. But everything's relative to every person, right? And that's what you start to realize, is that, you know, mental health or financial struggle or family struggles or anything, it's all relative to each individual person and what they're going through. And you're right. I think the most important thing that you can do in any of these situations, and I didn't see this episode going this way either, but is that you can just talk to somebody. You can open up to somebody that you can just share it with. And I get a lot of emails these days of people who do that, who open up about, you know, they'll literally write to me, this is the first time I've ever admitted this. And then they'll go on this long tear. And by the end of their email, they're like, wow, like, I can't believe I just wrote that to somebody. And I'll write back and I'm like, I hope you understand how cathartic that can be for you and to embrace it and to now take the next step on whatever it is you need to do. But I also think it's really interesting just to point out the metaphor of this podcast not going the way that you thought it was is a metaphor for every single business that's ever been created ever. You have a grand plan, you see a shiny, like, straight line on how things are going to go. It doesn't ever turn out that way. And being open to that and being, you know, able to embrace the fact that things are going to change and be different is what I think is one of the biggest, most successful attributes of any business owner or person or entrepreneur, or whatever you want to call yourself, is just saying, okay, that's all right. You know, it didn't go the way that I thought, but I'm okay with the way that it is going, and I'm going to follow that path now. And there's a quote that I would love to eloquently throw in here, but I won't be able to, but it's that a car's headlights can only see so far in front of you, but those headlights will get you to whatever destination you're trying to go step by step. And it's so true to think about that in life, that we see these little paths, we have these little things that are laid out in front of us, and even a path like $100,000 in debt, which seems like it's a dead end road, it made me a better person. It made me a more open person. Like, it's improved my relationship with my girlfriend exponentially because I've been willing to open up and to talk about things, especially some of the stuff we touched on earlier about, you know, my childhood, having multiple fathers, like things that I went through that were tough that I've just buried down deep. So, you know, I think that's just, there's a lot of deep stuff in here, and I hope that's okay for your audience, but I just think it is important that some people start talking about this and not just, like, you know, from our side of the world, Oprah and, you know, these other things, that it doesn't feel like anyone can actually connect to that. It's like real humans that you might run into on the street.
Absolutely. I have another question. I don't want to harp on too much about the iwearyourshirt.com failure, for want of a better word, towards the end of the project, but surely a business that's taking in $500,000 a year that's accruing debt, surely that's just a cash flow thing that could have been saved in some way, or knowing what you know now about businesses and sales and stuff 4 or 5 years down the line, or 2 or 3 years even down the line, would you say you could possibly have saved that? Is it a business model, or did it just run its course?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think that I Wear Your Shirt really grabbed a moment in time with social media that was really special, which was not just the very beginning, but kind of when people, you know, was starting to hit these little tipping points of people being on there. Like, you know, I started I Wear Your Shirt right after Facebook basically went from college to everybody could get on it. So that was before it was like so many people were on it, but it was just at the right time that a lot of people were kind of tuning into it. And so, you know, it was a timing thing that I think worked out well. And, you know, when you look at that business going from 2009 to 2014, essentially, or 2013, excuse me, 2013, that's pretty recent. That's, you know, we can all remember that's when a lot of brands are on Facebook or on Twitter, are buying all the ads, promoted tweets, blah, blah, blah. So it's very saturated to get a message out there, even if you've built your own audience and community. Now, the other way that I'll kind of answer your question is that just because I could have saved that business, or even looking back, like, I could probably start that business over and make it profitable and successful, doesn't mean that I should. And I think that so many people will, you know, this sunk cost bias mindset of, oh, I've invested so much time in this, or I've invested so much money, you know, I have to fix it, or I have to make it better. I think a lot of times it's better to quit something, to let something go, because quitting creates space for something new, for a new opportunity that could be better, it could be more profitable, it could be healthier for you to run that business. You know, I was working 14 and 16 hour days. I'm sure I could tone it down a little bit if I was to redo it or to change it up or anything. But I even thinking about it now, like, it sounds miserable to me to go back to that. Whereas now, I could take off, I just took off a month and a half. I did absolutely nothing business-wise for a month and a half, and it was fantastic. And I had, you know, money that was coming in from different projects that I had been putting a lot of work into. And I knew that when I started back up, I'd be able to just, you know, do whatever I wanted, and it was fine. Whereas a business like I Wear Your Shirt, it required me to show up every single day. And I think a lot of times we build these, we talked a lot about kind of my 9-to-5 job earlier, but we build a career dungeon when we try and leave the 9-to-5 world. You know, we build this more like a 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. at night instead of a 9-to-5. Like, we actually work more hours, harder and longer and with more stress than if we just showed up at a job every day, took a paycheck, and dealt with the stupid meetings and people that were there. And so I think it's just really important that if people are at a position where maybe they have their own I Wear Your Shirt, that maybe it's just a cash flow problem, or it's a, you know, time equation problem, but to really say, do I really want to be doing this? You know, or should I just move on to the next idea, because I think we'll all have more ideas. Like, I really believe that if you allow yourself the space, you can come up with tons of ideas and then have the time so that you're not distracted by something else to actually be able to execute them. That takes giving up on $500,000 company and saying, it's not worth it. You know, it's not worth the effort that goes into that.
One project that's really caught my attention in the last 6 or 8 months is Buy My Future. Now, this was something you flagged it for months ahead of time that you were doing something big. It was going to be absolutely massive. And you let people kind of guess about what it might be. You released the price. You had a blog about the process you were going through, but you never actually told people what you were going to do. And then you launched it, I think sometime in September, if I'm not mistaken. And it was called buymyfuture.com. What the hell is buymyfuture.com?
It's my latest attempt to sell the unsellable, or, you know, something just completely weird. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, we led this off with the idea that I'm very good at sales. I'm very good at, you know, getting people to buy things. And I think just because you're good at something doesn't mean you have to do it, right? I mean, that kind of goes back to what I just said about just because you have a business that makes money doesn't mean that you should be running it. And, you know, I look at, I've created a lot of projects over the past couple of years since walking away from Ira Your Shirt. You know, I've had a bunch of online courses. I've written a book. I have some web apps that I've created, like an online course platform and a little like recurring payment platform. And I've created all these things. And what I don't love about them is the every time I have to come up with a unique way to sell them and promote them. And that takes a lot of mental energy. It's stuff that I just don't love doing. I can do it. You know, I have the ability, but it doesn't mean that I should do it. And so Buy My Future, this idea came to me last summer, and I was looking at a journal, you know, and actually one step back from that, because maybe it'll be interesting to your audience and to you, is that I realized I was waking up every morning. I had plenty of money, and I don't mean like I'm rich. I mean, I have plenty of money to live by. I didn't have to be stressed about money. And I just was not happy every day. It was really weird. And I couldn't figure out what it was. My relationship was great. My dog was awesome. You know, I loved where I was living. You know, everything was really going well. And I was enjoying the work I was doing. But just something was amiss. And I started reading about people and their morning rituals. And I was like, I don't have a morning ritual. My morning ritual is I get up and I start working. Like a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of people who work for themselves, or even people who go to 9-to-5 jobs. Like you just get up and then you go to work. And I was like, maybe I should try a morning ritual. Like, just let's just try something different in the morning instead of what I'm normally doing. And so basically what I started doing was I removed the social media apps from my phone, and I moved the mail app from the first page of my phone to the last page of my phone. And I allow myself only to look at Instagram. So for 5 to 10 minutes every morning, what do I see? Beautiful photos, like people, landscapes, cars, dogs, like whatever it is, it's all good stuff. There's never a bad photo. You know, I love Barack Obama, but there's never a photo of Obama in my feed. There's never a photo of, you know, just war-battered places in my feed. And not that you shouldn't look at that stuff, but that doesn't need to be the start of your day. And so I look at this for 5 to 10 minutes, and then I get up and I make coffee. And I'm a Chemex guy now. I used to do bulletproof coffee, but I would just be very much in the zone of making my coffee, which I think a lot of people would say is my meditation, but I had no phone. I had no technology. I was just there making my coffee. And the other thing that I did was I read Calvin and Hobbes, the comic. I had the old books from when I was a kid while I was brewing the coffee, because it just made me so happy to read those comics. So for like 10 or 15 minutes, I just started doing this thing every morning that was completely different than what I had done before. And I wasn't reacting to anybody putting messages out into the world that were negative or any news or anything like that. And man, I found this profound change in like how I felt every day. And so fast forward to Buy My Future, one morning I'm drinking my coffee, and I just happened to grab my journal instead of a Calvin and Hobbes book. And I flip open to a page, and I was just kind of looking through it, and it just said, and I don't remember when I wrote it, it just said, what if I didn't have to sell things? And because I've thought about this over the years, like I've sold so much stuff, and what if I didn't? And then like the spark started flying in my brain, and I was like, what if I didn't? What if I just sold like one thing a year that was all of my things? And so this idea cobbled together. I'm drinking my coffee, I'm getting excited, I'm writing down notes. And literally that day, I came up with the idea to sell my future. So to basically put a price tag on access to everything I've created before, which ends up being about 10 products, services, books, and things, and then access to anything I will ever create in the future. So really, it's the opportunity to buy, like, I hate to speak in third person, but maximum lifetime Jason value, and also give a customer the ability to only have to pay me one time forever. So yeah, you're right. Like you said, I wrote this journal for 60 days. This was a public kind of blog posting journal thing where I said exactly how I was going to build this. I showed the branding exercises to build the logo and the website. What my fears were every single day, like what if no one buys? I started doing little customer interviews of people that might be customers of it and then posting and sharing those. And I just built this thing up and then I launched it. And it was crazy, man. For 2 weeks, I opened up my future to the world for $1,000 per purchase. And it's just a one-time purchase. You don't ever pay again. And no matter what I create for the rest of my life, you get access to if you were to buy my future.
If you were to make a car, for example, that retails at $30,000, you've got to give one to these 165
people. I literally have to plan in now with every project I create, any idea that I have. Well, and especially right now, I have 165 people who bought my future. They all get it. So I have to make sure in whatever I do that there's a buffer in there of 165 people getting it. Now, some people might say like, oh, well, that's crazy. You know, you might kill your profit or anything. And what I told you before we started recording was over half of the people that bought my future were people that I had never had contact with before. They weren't on my email list. They weren't people that even knew who I was or any of my other projects. I Were Your Shirt or Selling My Last Name or anything. And so that's really interesting to me because, you know, giving them the things in the future, yes, it might cost me some resources, whether that's money or space or whatever, but I look at it as an opportunity to have all these people who can test things for me, who can try things before somebody else, who can see something before and give me feedback and tell me if it's great or tell me if it sucks or, you know, tell me if it needs something that solves a better problem for them. But yeah, it was, you know, I think it was wildly successful because I sold my future, and if anybody bought, that's a success. But 165 people raised their hand and bought, and you know I'll open it up again this year. It'll be a little bit higher priced, but same model, like one-time payment. You get access to all my stuff, and then I'll close it down. And it's kind of my one-year kind of big thing that I'm going to do now.
$165,000 once a year is not a bad way to live life.
It really helps you get out of $100,000 in debt, I'll tell you that much. you know, and truthfully, I'm very transparent about the numbers. It cost me about $50,000 to do that project. And about 40,000 of that 50 was like affiliate payments. And I say affiliate, I hate that word. It's friends who basically promoted Buy My Future and I split the sales with them. And there were six people that did that, so it wasn't a lot. So about 40,000 of that, and then a little bit in Facebook ads. I used a company to do Facebook retargeting. I don't know anything about that world, but I know how well it works. And I know that anytime I go to like Zappos.com and then I go to Facebook and I see those same shoes I was just looking at, I'm like, whoa, this works. So I hired a company to do that. But so yeah, it cost me about 50,000 bucks, made about 110 in profit. And then, you know, in that 50,000, there were another 10,000 in like copywriting, you know, web development and just some other odds and ends expenses. But I was very transparent. You can actually find those, you know, in this blog series that I wrote of the exact expenses I was paying for so people could see what I was getting into.
I think it's very honorable when people actually share that because that's what people want to hear. And that's kind of what this podcast is about. We don't want to hear about the people who made millions and don't tell you, well, actually, I made 3 million, but it cost me 2.9.
Right.
To actually generate those sales. Whereas you're saying, well, I made 165,000, but I spent about 50, and you can actually see the breakdown of that. And people will turn around and say, well, actually, that's sensible. That makes sense. You know, I can see where those figures add up, and that was a profitable venture for Jason. So does that mean that the 100,000 profit, 115,000 profit you made from last year basically wiped out the debt and you left you with very little?
Yeah, I again, full transparency. Last year, I made $305,000 in total revenue. So 165 of that came from Buy My Future. And then the other 140 left over came from different project launches earlier in the year. You know, I have a bunch of things that kind of make money behind the scenes that are really small, so not big. But like I made over 3,000 videos during my I Wear Your Shirt time on YouTube. Well, those have ads that run on them, like just like standard video ads. Those make me like $250 a month. Sometimes they make me like $1,000 a month. I do nothing. Those videos just sit there and amass views and ad money. So, you know, there's things like that. You know, I have those multiple courses that sometimes people buy into. Sometimes I do little mini launches of them. So that 305 is kind of like total everything going into it. You know, and so my profit at the end of the year, you know, with the Buy My Future money was probably, I don't know, around like $70,000 total, because I had, you know, there's lots of other expenses that go into running all this stuff, to doing all these things. But yeah, you know, I haven't paid off my full amount of debt, because we have financial planners now that are a little bit better at keeping me organized with my money, because I'm terrible at it. And I pay them nothing, which is another amazing thing. Just a little life tip there. Great financial advisors and planners usually charge you nothing, because they make money on services that they have you sign up for, like moving your bank over to a different bank, or, you know, if you have life insurance, changing your life insurance policy. It's like, I don't know, if you guys can believe that I'm a very honest person, it's the least sleazy stuff ever. And I, trust me, I went down the rabbit hole to make sure that it wasn't. Anyway, I digress. I haven't paid off completely, because we're trying to figure out, okay, does this money make sense to pay off my short-term debts, or does it make sense to put into something that's like a little bit longer term, can compound some interest, you know, whatever. Maybe that's way more information than you wanted, but, you know, I plan on being kind of liquid with debt as soon as possible. We paid off our car this year, just trying to get out of every debt that I have, because I have not been debt-free since college, basically, and I want to know what that feels like again, because once you get that weight off your shoulders, it just kind of, I don't know, it frees you up so much. And right now I'm in such a good place with it, because I can see that I have enough money to pay it off. So it kind of feels like it is paid off.
There's two things I want to talk about specifically, two of your projects that were involved in Buy My Future, which I don't know, are the projects involved in Buy My Future still available for individual purchase?
Yeah. So that's the beautiful thing about Buy My Future too, is that, you know, there are 165 people who bought that who won't pay me for anything anymore. But there are a lot more people in the world who can continue to buy my stuff after that, and do continue to buy my stuff. Like just today, as we're recording this, there's a class that's included in Buy My Future. But I launched it for the third time today with two guys that I co-host it with. And it's already made us, I think, like $12,000 today on the launch. So, you know, people might think like, oh, you're selling your future, no one's ever going to buy your stuff. No, no. Only during those 2 weeks when people could buy my future was that even an option. Now people can only buy things one-off until my future is available. And most people are impatient and they're not going to wait 9 months to buy something. They're going to get it now and then they'll be like, it's fine. Like I just paid a little bit extra.
In terms of the two specific projects I want to talk about, it's relevant to, I suppose, people listening to this, and it comes back to the expertise you've got in sales, and particularly in that small sales, is mm-hmm. the how to get sponsorships for anything. And then one I'm particularly interested in at the moment, for obvious enough reasons, is how to get sponsorships for podcasts. How do those two projects come about, or are they part of the bigger Teachery, and we'll talk a bit about Teachery as well, are they part of the bigger Teachery project?
Yeah, so I had seen a lot of people doing online courses in 2013, really seemed like to be like the popular year for it. And I was like, I could create this. This seems interesting. But what would I teach? You know, what's a thing that's unique to me? And what I found was that the thing I get asked about the most is probably one of the most interesting things that I could teach. And that thing was sponsorships, because I'd had so much experience with it over the years. And I decided, okay, well, what do I know? You know, I just started writing down all the stuff that I knew about sponsorships. And, you know, it ended up being a bit more process stuff than I had originally thought. You think that you're kind of in the same place 5 years later than you were when you started of, I just emailed some people and did it. No, I've got pretty specific templates of emails that I use, spreadsheets that I fill out when I'm contacting people, ways that I can find, you know, potential companies to reach out to for sponsorship, and how I find their emails, and then how I do follow-up emails to them, because those are the most important part of the process. So it's all these different things that actually help land the sponsor. And so I said, oh, wow, there is a lot here. And, you know, I just said, okay, let me just record a couple videos of me talking about this and send it to a few people, very much like your minimum viable product if you follow lean methodology, but very much like first version, like beta version of this. And I started sending it to people, and people were like, this is amazing. Like these scripts that you write for emails and these processes for following up and just this like categorizing of how you find companies is really interesting. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that just seems second nature to me, right? It just seemed like I've done this for years, so who's going to care? Well, a lot of people cared. You know, I launched that How to Get Sponsorships for Anything course, and in the first couple months made about $50,000 selling that course. And it's a $500 course. So you can see about, you know, 100 people bought it. And it's really interesting just to like see that. And then my favorite part of it is not the value exchange of money and, you know, me being able to be like, oh, cool, that worked. I still get emails from people like now, a couple years later, who say, hey, I just went back and like watched module 7 and it helped me land a sponsor for this thing I'm doing. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. So the reason why I made a second course, which was the How to Get Sponsors for Podcast, was because 2 years after I made that first course, podcasting has just exploded. As we both know, we're on one right now. We both have our own podcasts. And it's just one of those things where people don't know what to do. You know, they see other people have sponsorships, but what are you going to email that person and be like, hey, can you tell me everything you know about how you got a sponsor? Like, no one's going to respond to that. So I said, well, I do know how to do this. I can get sponsors pretty easily. Let me just exactly how I would do it. And I created this course and it's helped people get sponsorships. Again, I just had a guy email me, I think it was Monday of this week, who's like, hey man, I landed a $20,000 sponsor for my show. He's going to help sponsor the next like 3 months of episodes. And like, we're working together all from things in my course that he paid $200 for. So I'm like, wow, what a great investment. You know, you got all my knowledge, all my thoughts in this thing. And so, you know, you kind of bring up online courses for me. And I just think that online courses are like the next blog posts or the next like blogging things. Like everyone had a blog a couple years ago, right? Did you have a blog a couple years ago?
Yes, I know I did.
Right. So online courses for me are the next blog where everyone has a skill to teach. You have amazing things that I know you can teach. I bet you could teach a course on just like, you know, mental toughness, because some of the things that you've done that I'm sure you've talked about on previous episodes, and you've already, you know, told people how amazing you are, but I'll repeat it, that just some of the things you've accomplished in your life, both from the things that you went through as a younger adult, but also in the like biking around the world and all that other stuff, you could teach people some of the processes of how you did that, and it would improve their lives exponentially, and you can make some money from it and feel good about that value. So that's why I think online courses are such an interesting place to play in. That's why I have now, I think, 7 or 8 online courses, because I just keep learning things and then trying to teach people what I've learned. And I just see it as a really, you know, great way to share information.
No, I agree with you. It's actually come up in conversation with friends who are in that line of work about creating online courses. So it's something I'm looking into at the moment. So I have to watch this space, I'm afraid, on that. But I think I'm going to have to splash out and get your own podcast sponsorship one, because I think that's my priority at the moment, is to try and make this pay for itself, essentially.
You know, it would be really interesting. I would challenge you to do this. If you do want to get the course, I'd love for you to tell your listeners what that process was like, right? Like, maybe you would record it over multiple sessions, but you would record like, I went through this content, this is what I learned, I started applying it, here's some of the answers I got back, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, landed sponsors, and you could literally show people like your journey through it. I just think that would be really cool. You know, that's typically how I try and do anything, because I feel like the more you can bring people along and kind of share behind the scenes, that transparency, and you brought up a really good one earlier. It's like the people who make $3 million, but it costs them $2.9 million to make that $3 million. The real stories of us real people doing these things are the things that actually matter and can teach people stuff. So I would challenge you. Just throwing that out there, you don't have to accept it at all, but I think it'd be really fun to listen to.
Is that you offering me a free course?
Sure, absolutely. If you'll commit to sharing it publicly, I will happily give you that course for free.
That's a deal. Absolutely 100% on board with that one.
Love it.
The other aspects of the Buy My Future, because there's some fantastic things that you offered in there. Obviously, all of these courses we've talked about are all available as part of that. Can you give us an idea of what the price is going to be this year?
So yeah, I'm adding what it looks about like $2,000 in additional content. So last year I basically said there was $4,500 in value. That's kind of how I anchored what everything that you would get right away and what I could kind of estimate in the future would be worth. So this year, I think I'm adding about $2,000. So I'm saying it's $6,500 in value. And the price last year was $1,000 to buy it. The price this year, I think I'm going to do $1,250. So it's only $250 more. I do a payment plan option, because I totally realize that $1,000 is a lot for people to spend in one kind of hit. And so I did a 4 payment plan of 250. This makes it easy for me. Now I can just say, oh, it's a 5 payment plan of 250. Or you can buy it all in one shot if you want. And interesting, fun little tidbit. The majority of people, 60% of people who bought My Future last year paid in full upfront. I actually thought it would have been way lower, but I love that people were emailing me and they're like, hey, I know your story. Like, I don't want to be in debt, so I'm buying this and paying it off right away. Kind of fun little aside. But yeah, so to answer your question, $1,250 will be the price for this year when it opens up.
And just so people if there is somebody who is feeling a bit flahoolock, which is the Irish word for generous, and I suppose with one eye to the future and one eye to the value that they get back from being part of that community, where can they find out more information on that?
Yeah, you know, the Buy My Future website is quasi-closed down right now. I mean, you can kind of see it. I've purposefully hidden it. If you want to search, you know, if you want to go back through the story of how it all happened, you can just search Project Galaxy on Google, and that'll take you to kind of the Medium posts that I wrote, and that's where I did it, was on Medium.com. But I think that would be fun to kind of just read through all those. You can kind of see it on the site. But yeah, I kind of purposefully keep it hidden because I wanted to reward the people who paid attention, who bought into it, and now everybody else who has to wait, you kind of have to be in the dark a little, just as everybody else was, until it opens this year. But you can still find some stuff, obviously, from last year.
Something else that's come to my attention from reading through various bits and pieces about you on the internet is that you're pretty much obsessed with Elon Musk and the whole Tesla car revolution.
Oh my gosh.
Would he be one of the biggest influences on you as an entrepreneur?
You know, this is an interesting question because I am influenced by his ability to chase after huge ideas. And so I think like when an idea like Buy My Future comes up, you know, anybody would be scared. I'm scared of the idea. It's a crazy thing to put out into the world. And then, okay, so if I compare this idea to like Elon Musk trying to terraform Mars, right? Trying to like send rockets into space, creating this Tesla automobile. It's amazing. I'm like, why am I afraid to sell my future? Like this, none of this has the repercussions of like this guy going after these things. So it is super influential in that it kind of gives me a way to compare my self-doubt to like, well, this guy's doing this and he's super successful and doing amazing things. I can do my own version of that as well. And I think that's where comparison can be good, because it can also be kind of scary where you're like, oh, well, you know, I'm not creating an electric car or putting things into space. I'm just selling my future. That's kind of small and whatever, but it's not. Again, like going back to what I said early on, like everything's relative to each person. But I do love Musk. I wouldn't want to be him. I wouldn't want to trade places with him. I wouldn't want the pressure that he has to deliver on what he's doing. I also love control. You know, he does have control, but he answers to a board for every one of his companies. He has a lot of money that has to be poured into these things. I don't want any part of that anymore. I want full control. I want enough money to live off of. I want to enjoy my life. And I do want to buy a Tesla. That's on the list of things in my life that I want to buy. But you know, a couple years ago, Jason probably would have bought it now when I had the extra cash. Now Jason's like, we'll wait a year or two. Or what's really cool is in the States, and I don't know if you have this for you guys, is people are actually renting their Teslas now because they're such a like, you know, desirable car that you can rent a Tesla from a person. And I've done this here in San Diego where I live, and it's like $100 per day and you get to drive it around. And then you're like, okay, now I don't have to keep paying for that expensive car. I got to enjoy it for a little while and I can just rent it again whenever I want.
That's a pretty cool idea, although I could imagine if you were renting it on a regular basis, you'd probably end up covering the cost of the car in the first
place. Yes, absolutely. It's good for like weekends, and like we just did a road trip up the coast of California, and so we took it for 8 days, which was great. But you know, then you give it back and you're like, okay, I'm a normal car that we've paid off that costs us nothing. This is awesome.
Road trip in California along the coast sounds kind of like my cycle. Where'd you end up?
We went through San Clemente, which is, I think, going to actually be our next home, which will be fun because it's just a cool little beach town. We went through Santa Barbara, which was not our favorite, to be completely honest. It just felt a little touristy to us, and we went in January. So feeling touristy in January, that's kind of weird. And then our last stop was San Luis Obispo, which was just beautiful. Such a cool little town.
I absolutely loved SLO. It was absolutely...
Right?
I couch surfed there with two girls who were in... Cal Poly.
Yeah.
Cal Poly, and just I'm still in touch with them, and they're absolutely awesome. But the town was just fantastic. I really liked it. Santa Barbara for me seemed a little bit... We're going completely off topic here, but Santa Barbara for me was a little bit too expensive looking. If that makes sense. Like
for I've what never, you get,
I've never felt like I'm in a place that you need so much money just to be in the place. You know,
and it doesn't even feel like... It's not even one of those places where you're like, oh, I feel so good that I'm spending this much money. Instead, I was like, this is what I'm getting? Like, I didn't get it. Like, it just didn't resonate.
Well, I didn't have the money to spend at all.
Yeah.
I was on a shoestring budget, but I just felt walking down the street, the main street in Santa Barbara, I just felt like I needed to have six figures in my bank account just to go into a shop. I just it didn't strike a chord with me. It was just completely against what I was trying to do with my trip and my cycle. And I just, anyway, I digress. Tell us a little bit about the Action Army and specifically the Action Army podcast.
Yeah, I've been really interested over the years to just try and build communities. You know, I built one with Iria Shirt that was really cool. It built this passionate audience that showed up every day. You know, you can imagine people showing up to a website where I'm wearing a different ad essentially every day. I mean, 10,000 people were showing up a day to see what shirt I was wearing. That was crazy. But those numbers didn't matter to me. What mattered is that there were people that I connected with every day and I learned about them. And, you know, people that I still know and talk to on a first name basis that, you know, from years ago. And so anyway, the Action Army is kind of the next progression for me where I wanted to have some semblance of a community, but I also wanted people to feel like they were attached to something. And that, you know, taking action is kind of the thing that I just really realized about myself, that I'm really good at just doing things. You know, I don't hold back on making decisions. I don't let self-doubt sway me from doing something. Even when I'm afraid, even when I'm scared, and I am every time I put something out there into the world, I do it, and I'm not afraid of the consequences, and it has always led me to positive things. And so, yeah, the Action Army is basically this little community where every week I send an email on Mondays, and it's something I've learned or some process that I have or just some idea or thought that I want to share in a little bit of longer form writing. And actually that creating that email list has been the most impactful thing for my business. I mean, I attribute 90% of my income to sending those emails because I know that that's where people are buying from. You know, they're not finding things. I don't get a lot of organic traffic to any of my products or projects. It's all from me sending emails and teaching people things and all this other stuff. And so, yeah, I have that email list and I just kind of decided, you know, I write these things, they go on my website and then they kind of die. You know, they kind of like something I've written 6 months ago, it's really hard to find. And so I thought, well, what if I created a podcast where I talked about some of the older topics that I really loved and believed in that I just kind of wish had a little bit more, you know, legs to stand on. And so that's really what the Action Army podcast was based on. And then, you know, basically I was recording the first episode and someone emailed me while I was recording. I probably should have had my email closed. But it was like, Jason, I did this thing that you were talking about and I've had this success and it's like little success. You know, it's like I created a podcast or I landed my first sponsor or whatever. And I was like, oh, I should tell this person's story on this podcast. So, you know, the podcast is now basically a topic from me and then a success story from someone who's in my community, in the Action Army. And I just kind of riff a little bit, you know, on what they've written in or, you know, if they've sent an audio. And I'm just having a lot of fun with it, man. I think that's the key for me is business can tend to be really serious for a lot of people. And it was for me years ago. And I'm just really trying to enjoy it. I'm trying to just put good stuff out into the world that hopefully brings people value because it's brought me value. And yeah, I'm loving it. So the Action Army is kind of like my prized possession these days. I'm very appreciative of being able to email people. And it's not huge. My email list is like 8,000 people. So it's not like I'm one of those guys who has 100,000 people on his list.
It's not a bad hit rate to sell $165,000 products, which essentially is intangible to a list of 8,000 people. I think it shows a pretty high belief in your abilities to deliver on what you say you're going to do. So kudos for that. We do finish the show every week, Jason, with a very simple question. And it's the same every week. And the question is, what can the listeners of the Breffni Early Show do for Jason?
Oh, that's an interesting one. Here's what I would like to do. I would like the listeners of this show to ask for something from someone else that they are uncomfortable about, whether that's a sponsor, whether that's a loved one to make a change in their life, whether that's calling a credit card and saying, you know, I'm in this debt. Is there anything you can do to help me out? Make a difficult ask and then email me and tell me what happened. I would love to hear those stories. I would love to know what happens with people. And I know that's not necessarily what you're asking for, but I would care more to, if you've been inspired by this and you were like, oh, this guy just isn't, you know, is willing to ask for anything, go on a limb and ask for something. And then send me an email, easy email, just hello@jasondoesstuff.com. And just let me know what happened, whether it failed, whether it didn't work. Maybe you've got fired from your job. Please don't get fired from your job. But, you know, you made some money, you landed some deal, you did something cool. it made some impact. I'd just love to hear those stories.
No, I think I want to be CC'd on those emails as well. Jason, it's an absolute privilege to have had you on the show. Thank you very much for coming out and taking the time to join me from San Diego. Obviously, it's not quite as fantastic the weather here in Leitrim Village, looking back over across over the Atlantic. But delighted for you to take the time out and actually share your story with us. I think anyone who's listened to it will be no doubt inspired to succeed or to maybe make that call or that ask. I think you actually summed up that final question perfectly, in my opinion. I think it's so much better when the person answering the question answers with something that has nothing to do, no tangible or financial benefit to the person who's actually asking the request. And I think that's what I hoped you would respond with. So thank you very much for that. It's been an absolute pleasure, as I said, having you on the show. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Brefni. I appreciate the opportunity.